Annie Gaston on 105.7 ABC Darwin and 783 Alice Springs. Well, she's a woman who most Darwin kids grew up with. Well, at least with her story anyhow, and scary tales of her appearance, most particularly out at East Point. The sort of out the road. You know that place that virtually every town has got where you go to get away from grown-ups, usually at night time, to get away from daytime, the daytime world full of adult restrictions. And here to tell us about his experiences as a young Territorian, a Darwinian growing up, is Roland Dieting, who was also the winner for the third time, of the NT Literary Award, the CDU Essay Prize. And his prize was for a fantastic story about this woman, the Poinciana woman of East Point, the truth behind Darwin's most popular urban myth. G'day, Roland. Thanks for coming in.
How are you, Annie?
Oh, I'm good. We often tell stories here on a Friday afternoon about sort of long time ago. You know, your stories today are going to be more about, the myths or the stories that you grew up with here as a teenager.
Yeah, and the thing about the Poinciana woman is that in the essay that I wrote, the earliest mentions I could find were from after World War II, so it's been around for a while. That's, you know, over 50 years.
The story's been around.
Yes,
But you grew up with her. You learned about her when you were a teenager?
I learned her when I was a teenager, yeah, because one person would come and say, did you know about... Then you'd hear about, well, this happened, that happened, and then... Wow, that's insane. And then another person would tell you another version. Hang on, that's spookily similar, but it's not identical, so there must be some sort of truth going on here because they seem to have had meetings with her, they talk with her, they've been scared by her. So it's not something they've read, it's something they've experienced. And I found the story, like I said, utterly believable because it was... It didn't have any pumpkins and dragons and so on. So it was, the version I heard was very contemporary and shockingly believable.
Okay. Well, can you tell us the first story that you can remember? What was the Poinciana woman supposed to have done, or where did she come from?
I heard it that she was just a young, beautiful woman that was sexually assaulted by a group of Japanese fishermen. And... she was always, from what I remember, she wasn't a white woman. She was a coloured woman. She was assaulted by a group of fishermen, and when she discovered that she was pregnant, she became depressed, and then she committed suicide. And then afterwards, she committed suicide by hanging herself from a Poinciana tree, and then later on, she's come back to... have her revenge on unsuspecting men, and those sort of things, the to be blunt, the rape, the suicide, the way that she did it, it's thoroughly believable, like I said. I mean, and now she's come back now as an old woman who she entices men by initially appearing as a beautiful damsel in distress, but then once you fall into that trap,
You're gone. Well, did you have to go past East Point? Did you have to do that drive to see her?
Yeah. You had to go out in East Point. That's where she hung around. But interestingly enough, Maisie Austin's written about this, and so is Inez Cabillo. She was initially seen at the Daly Street Railway Bridge, which, like you were saying before, I think that was at the time, this is in the 50s, was probably a place where other teenagers went to escape adult supervision.
Yeah.
And as Darwin grew, they sort of had to go out to East Point to hide from the eyes of the adults and so on.
So she told you that was something that she heard when she was little?
No, Maisie Austin's written an autobiography, and so is Inez Cabillo about, and it's not about the Poinciana woman, obviously, but they mention her in a different context, like I said, at the Daly Street Bridge. That's the earliest things I could find.
So did they call her the Poinciana woman or just a spooky ghost?
No, they called her the Poinciana lady, Poinciana woman. So this goes back.
Yeah.
It's the World War II.
Have you heard any details of the sightings in your research? What did she looked Asian? She looked.
I've. By the way, I've never seen the Poinciana woman.
Yeah.
I don't want to see the Poinciana woman. I always got the impression that she's Asian, long hair, very attractive, and very alluring. And it's a revenge thing. This time it's personal. You've done this to me when I was alive, so I'm going to do this to you when I'm dead.
Out at East Point, there's that big, long row of Poincianas there on the left. Is that where she's supposed to hang out?
Yes.
It's very beautiful.
It's very beautiful. And just while we're talking about this on Friday the 13th, all this week I've been noticing the beautiful Poinciana trees everywhere. They're all in bloom.
Yeah.
They've all been in bloom the last month.
They're incredibly beautiful,
yeah,
aren't they? I wonder if anybody also has stories about Poinciana woman. I mean, if you grew up here and you hung out at East Point, if you went to the high schools here and that was your hangout, you probably heard the story. It was probably passed down to you. Look, if you've got a yarn and you've got some memories about the old days out at East Point, call up. 1-300-057-222 while we remember your teenage years out there. And probably there's been a little bit of sort of illicit substances and a little bit of youthful fun and enthusiasm and experimentation that went on out there. If you want to reminisce about your youth out at East Point, give us a bell, 1-300-057-222. If, of course, you know, you want to squib out a bit and remain anonymous, you can text us on 1-999-1057. And while we've just got your attention there about detail, there's a severe thunderstorm warning in Darwin and Rula area for damaging winds for people in the Bino Harbour area and parts of the Cox Peninsula areas. Forecasts to affect Kangaroo Flats training ground by 3:30, Dundee Beach, Bino Harbour, Milne Inlet and Rankin Point by 4 p.m. So get ready, secure loose objects outside and avoid remaining in the open when the storm threatens. So keep your eyes out for that. Don't you get too spooked, Roland?
I'm getting spooked.
You're getting spooked over there. Oh, Betty in Alice Springs from way back in 49, you saw the Poinciana woman.
Kidding.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Betty, you saw her.
Well, I think I did.
Yeah?
I used to be... I used to work for a group of people who cleaned the government offices when they were in Wood Street. And I used to cross the railway, Daly Street Bridge.
That's it, yeah.
And... I sort of I knew about the story anyway, and I lived in Parap, I suppose you would call it these days, Rusty Valley, we used to call it. But anyway, I saw this woman in a satiny kind of red dress, and she was Asian looking, and I blinked and she was gone, and believe me, from the Daly Street Railway Bridge to where I used to work at the do the cleaning at the government office took me about 30 seconds to get there.
What time of night was it?
Oh, it was about 5 in the morning.
Oh, have you heard of her in the red dress, Roland, or white?
Usually a white dress, but that ties in too because she used to be associated also with a frangipani tree. There's some stories that mention her with a frangipani tree rather than a Poinciana tree. But then again, the Poinciana's got red flowers as well. There's all these variations to the story, but there's a general common theme going underlying all the versions I've heard.
And was it all sort of smoky and eerie, like, you know, when you see you know, movies about ghosts and stuff, Betty? What?
No, very clear. She had red poinciana flowers in a sort of a corsage down her in her hair, hanging down to about her maybe upper jaw, lower ears, sort of thing.
Gee.
Like we used to all wear in the old days. But I'll tell you, it was scary.
Oh, good on you, Betty. You survived. Do you know anybody else who saw her?
No, I'd heard people say they'd seen her, and they often said a white. They always said white dress, oh, except my cousin Fred Bush. He said red dress. But it was after I'd described the person, the woman, and he was the only one who said red dress, but she definitely had a red satiny-looking dress on with some kind of embroidery down the front.
And Betty, she was of Asian appearance.
Yeah. Sort of Asian. What they used to call Eurasian, I think, in the old days, you know, an Asian Australian or Asian European features. She was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And really clear skin. That was what really sort of made me want to take, you know, I blinked and I thought, oh, beautiful skin, and then she was gone.
Hey, and have you seen any other people like this? Is this sort of a once-off for you, Betty?
No, it's not.
No.
No, I've had a Spanish gentleman who's been my spirit guide for God knows how long, but I didn't have him until I was about 17, and I was about 16 when I saw this lady.
Gee, got some interesting yarns there, Betty. We might get you to come and tell us some more stories another day.
Betty, you're right on the money. That ties in with everything I've researched before, even down to the thing in her hair, the corsage and so on. So.
Oh, it's giving me the shivers all over again.
It's giving me the shivers. Thank you very much for your story.
Shivery feeling I had before I took off like Marjorie Jackson.
Good on you. Betty, stay online, will you?
Thank you.
Okay. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Are you all right, Roland?
I'm right. It's just that she's got it right down to the... I'm surprised with all the detail.
Yeah. And has there been any reports of people claiming... that she, well, I suppose you wouldn't have sort of survived. I mean, has she actually sort of hurt anybody?
Well, the thing is, no one's actually died out in these points that I know of. So if she has killed anyone or done something dastardly to someone, they've disappeared completely. So this is like Blair Witch Project now.
It is a bit. So this was part of the story that was passed down to I mean, my children know about the Poinciana woman. It's like part of the rite of passage that you learn this story.
That's what got me going, because I used to be a literacy tutor in a high school, and it just came up in conversation. And then this is in the 1990s. One person chimed up, the other person chimed up. They all knew the complete...
complete story.
Yeah. And this, like I said, this is, as Betty said, this is from 1940-something up to, what is it? That I would have heard it from them from 1997, maybe.
Yeah.
So there's a consistency, and it's an informal consistency, because no one's read anything. They don't sit down and read about the Poinciana woman. It's told to them. It's an ongoing oral history that stays.
That stays the same.
Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting, because it's usually Chinese whispers, isn't it?
Yep,
and it all sort of moves around. Hey, in your story, though, as well as talking about the Poinciana woman, you talked a lot about a culture that occurs out there after dark, East Point. Really interesting. You were talking about... Will you explain it?
Well, I was talking to you before, and it's a South African word. It's stotting or stoating. It's something that springbok gazelles do. They boing, 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 boing. Well, they do that apparently not to escape the lion. They do that because it's like showing off to the lion, this is how fit I am. So don't bother chasing me, I'll outrun you. Which is the only thing... Why I mentioned that was because when I was a teenager, a lot of adolescents seemed to do that to prove how fit they were to these are male adolescents, to the opposite gender. So they would look at me. I'm very healthy. I can drive fast cars. I can subject my body to G-forces. I can drink as much alcohol. I can smoke as much ganja. I can jump off cliffs. I can throw myself, you know, into the surf. And I'm healthy, so mate with me. That was the whole thing. Mate with me because I'm so healthy. And it just never seemed to work. The girls would be looking at these idiots getting sloshed in their ridiculously souped-up cars, playing this ridiculous music, and the girls never wanted to mate with them. And when they did, I'm not going to mate with them. So it was really bad, stupid. It was a lot of fun.
Well, but what was it like out there? And you talk about graphic things like people throwing up and having too much to drink and stuff like that, and or smoke. But, and you know, being amorous out in the bushes there. You talked as well as that. There was another parallel sort of community that maybe a lot of grown-up white fellas and, you know, middle-class people don't know about.
Yeah, because there were a lot of damaged people there, to be honest, and a fair whack of them were white. There was a lot of Indigenous people there too, but you had a community of long grassers, petrol sniffers, whatever you want to call them. You had people with obviously serious mental problems. They were just camping out there and living there. It was like a very... I've heard about stories of Mindle Beach in the 70s. This was like a completely warped Mindle Beach. People that were older men who were desperate, stuffed up, you know. They lived out because the whole place was fortified during World War II, as you know, all these army ruins, and that's where they lived and camped, and it was an element of danger there. So if the Poinciana woman didn't get you, I mean, there was every likelihood that some paranoid schizophrenic could just... All this sort of thing. It was a semi-dangerous place to be, which is why, I guess, adolescents gravitated towards it. It was... There was no police cars. Or now and then a police car would come in and do a symbolic thing, but everyone saw them coming. So it was... Bruce Springsteen calls it darkness on the outside of town, on the edge of town, and that's what East Point was.
I think every town has one.
I'm sure they do. They better do, because that's a pressure release.
Now, what about rites of passage stuff? Jumping off the cliff out there into the water is a favourite pastime, and probably something that those boys who were stotting, I think girls do it too.
You reckon?
Out there, yeah. Isn't that part of the growing up thing?
I guess it's pretending, obviously pretending that you're healthy, but also pretending that you're more you're more adult than you actually are.
Or just giving yourself a real buzz. I mean, lots of people have got energy and they need to get rid of, don't they?
Angry Anderson said it. Why do people take drugs? Because they're fun.
Yeah.
You know? It's, and just as we're talking about this, I think it is a pressure release. As you say, every town probably has one. Every town probably needs one. Where do you want adolescents to let off steam? Do you want them to be doing that in Mitchell Street, bashing each other silly, or do you want them to be in a semi-rural area? Because, as you say, they've got energy to spare.
Well, was it a pretty good social place, though? I mean, did people sort of meet up out there and have parties and stuff like that?
Yeah, it wasn't as heavy as it... Look, I haven't been... It wasn't as heavy as it is in inner-city Darwin now.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems to be a lot more dangerous, actually, in inner-city Darwin now than it ever was at East Point.
Well, we got a text. Please take note. The dead can't hurt you. Only the living can do that. Don't fear the Poinciana woman. Doesn't say who it's from.
Scaredy cat.
What was it like for you growing up then in Darwin?
Obviously didn't know any different. I had a ball.
Yeah.
I had a ball because Darwin was... You remember, you had the singer on before, what's his name, so-and-so, James?
Yeah, Stephen James.
Stephen James. And to me, Darwin was a... He was talking about it being in an isolated place where he's always looking out when he was growing up. Darwin was isolated, but I never really felt... I suppose it was a happy mix of the two. It was never really... I never felt like it was an isolated post out somewhere. It had the what can I say, the benefits of both of this, of being a city and a town. I think Darwin was a city and a town at the same time, if I'm making any sense.
Yeah. Back to the Poinciana woman.
Uh-oh.
Right at the start of this story, I talked about the different names that she has around the sort of Indonesian, Southeast Asian, Northern Australian area. Where else does she, how else does she manifest herself then?
Pretty much the same as that, as she does in Darwin. She's, and it's, the story goes from the Malaysian Peninsula all down Indonesia, the Philippines, Thursday Island, it's even in the Kimberleys. So it's like a,
just sweeps across that region.
And
similar appearances?
Similar appearances, similar behaviour. It's the similar name, Poinciana, you know, Poinciana. It's, my wife, she first heard it in, Broome. Other people have heard it in Cocos Island. So, there's a bit in my essay where one person, she heard the story in Perth, and the man that told it to her, he was from Cocos Keeling Islands, and he hadn't even heard the story from Darwin. So it's like this current that's come down the whole Malaysian Indonesian peninsula, and I think we should be kind of half proud that Australia has the Poinciana woman, because she's a Southeast Asian myth. And yet she lives in Darwin, she lives in Broome. I mean, and really lives. She's not, these people are repeating the story, not because they've read it or they want to. It's because it's the number one urban myth of Darwin.
Well, you also heard her, her name when somebody, when you were, I think you were out trying to find a laptop or something, when somebody referred to a grumpy girlfriend.
Tell us
that story. It's great.
This story actually, well, I won't. By the way, my essay is on the Northern Territory Library website, so if you want to go through, you can read the whole graphic version and weep. But I'd researched it, and I'd come to a dead end, because it was really just what the historical references I could find after World War II, and then pretty much oral history, what someone had said. I couldn't take the research any further, and then I was in a questionable situation with a questionable individual who, he was a drug dealer, and he got talking about this, and he was talking about his brother's girlfriend, and he called her a Poinciana. And then I said, What did you call her? I thought he called her a Poinciana. No, he called her a Poinciana, and then he called her a Poinciana. And he said, "Well, because look at her hair. Look at the way she walks, and that thing of what Betty said about the skin as well. Because she, you know, she's got that really light skin, even though she's Asian." And then he started telling me the other version. And I thought, this really clicks in, and my listeners out there, Google Poinciana and see what you come up with. It's the Poinciana woman. Dead set.
Well, Neville, g'day, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
You got a yarn for us?
Oh, not a real yarn, but to keep me in the yard at home in Brisbane in the late 1950s, early 60s, there was a big Poinciana tree in the park, and I was told the Poinciana lady would take me away if I...
Brisbane?
In Brisbane in the 60s, and Clear as day, I can remember it, and there's a bit of that Poinciana legend in my whole family, sort of thing.
And where are you from?
I was born in Brisbane, but now I've been here for a while, and the rest of the family's all interstate, and we all had threats of the Poinciana woman at some stage or another.
Oh, she's spreading, she's moving, she's going, she's heading south now.
She's everywhere. Hey, and sorry, Neville?
She was there 50-odd years ago.
Yeah.
And what did anybody tell you what she looked like, or...? how evil she was or angry she was or anything?
Just that she took little kids and and I never really had vision of her apart from a sort of a witchy sort of person. And she took them into the Poinciana. You went into the Poinciana somewhere.
Yeah. I've heard that one too. In some stories she goes after lecherous men. In other stories she either makes the sound of a small child or she hunts small children because she's jealous of what happened to her, you know. So she doesn't want other mothers to be happy. So that's another theme as well. Yeah.
Gee, thanks.
Thanks for that, yeah.
All right, cheers, mate.
See you later. Neville, Glenda, you got a Poinciana story.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Okay. First of all, I grew up in Darwin, so had a lot of dealings with the stories of the Poinciana woman. And the story that I know is that everybody used to go out there in cars.
Oh, yeah.
Late at night. So it's always been a spot for that sort of activity. But there'd be whole packs of cars full of kids, and this would have been... it would have been over 35 years ago, and there were always kids telling stories about the Poinciana woman, and apparently she was a woman who'd been... she'd lost her lover, and she was extremely jealous, and she used to appear to young men, and she used to hang by her hair in the trees. You know,
God.
As you go into East Point?
Yep.
So we had lots of friends back in those days saying, yeah, I saw the Poinciana woman.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody would be jumping around in the car screaming about it, you know. We'd always watch out for her.
Yep.
And the other story is I spend a lot of time in Indonesia because my husband's Indonesian, and over there the story is of the Pontianak.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, I think it's a totally different thing. The Pontianak is a... in Western mythology, I guess the equivalent would be a succubi. So she gets her youth and her beauty by basically eating babies.
Mm-hmm.
So when I lived in Indonesia and I was pregnant, I was not allowed to go outside after about 10 o'clock at night or even have the window open because she might have seen me in the day in the market and she would come after me.
Same thing happens in Timor. Yeah, pregnant.
Over. Yep. And India, Malaysia, all of those countries. And she presents as a beautiful young woman. And, of course, when she lays down at night to go and seek out her victims, who she's often found in the day and followed them, she'll go back home to where she lives or her lair, and she'll come out at night and go to where she's followed the person to, which is usually their home. And... when she leaves her body at night, it's just the top part of her body and all the guts and stuff hanging out.
Yeah, like a sea wasp. Yeah.
Oh, Glenda.
Yeah.
Spooky.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling.
Pleasure.
Well, this has turned into a real Friday the 13th, has it not, Roland?
It has. And when I was talking to your producer, wanted me to come in last week, and I wasn't even thinking. I said, I can't make it. And then... on Monday, I looked at the calendar,
and it was time for you to come in.
It was Friday the 13th. I was being.
Well, look, it's absolutely fantastic to have you in here, and I bet you there are a lot of people who are sitting around having a bit of a listen and remembering those yarns that they heard all those years ago. If you have actually got any more stories, you can text us on 1-999-1057, or even wander into our blog in the afternoons. That's abc.net.au/Darwin/Alice Springs, and add some of your stories. Thanks for coming in again, Roland.
No problem.
Deeting. What's the website that we can check out the whole story? I've got it here.
It's the Northern Territory Library website.
Yep.
Just Google Northern Territory Library. You'll get the website, and there's a prompt for the 2009 Literary Awards. And click onto that, and you're there.
It's a great story. Thank you.
I'd like to hear more could more versions of it too. And thank you for the people that phoned up today.
On air and online on 105.7 ABC Darwin and 783 Alice Springs.